No matter what, steadiest job in the world, do not look ahead and allocate that money. We're talking about you have the money, you have the energy. What should it do? You cannot have energy that hasn't yet come in.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields. Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, welcome. Jim and Jamie Shields here with Jesse Meekum.
Thanks, I'm excited to be here.
Personal finance expert, speaker, and business leader, Jesse is the founder of You Need a Budget, or YNAB if you're a very busy and important. I always say it. It's so fun to just say YNAB. Jesse hosts the You Need a Budget podcast, the Beginning Balance podcast, and is the Wall Street Journal bestselling author of You Need a Budget. He's nothing if not consistent. A self-proclaimed recovering CPA, he's deeply passionate about teaching individuals, families, and business owners YNAB's four rules to help them gain total control of their money. Jesse first developed this method, an original spreadsheet, as a broke, newly married college student, which I can't wait to hear more about. Since 2004, the software has grown into a leading personal finance platform, and it's helped hundreds and thousands of people break the paycheck to paycheck cycle. Now, YNAB has a growing team living and working all around the world. He's built a thriving remote culture even before Zoom was cool. So welcome, Jesse. We're so glad to have you.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. This will be fun.
Can't wait. So first and foremost, Jesse, you are a husband and a father. And we were just talking, you have seven children. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
What's the age range for you guys?
Our oldest is 17 and yeah, he's a senior in high school. So he's 17. And then the youngest he's about 18 months old. So he was born last March, which was interesting. Yeah. I'm not kidding when I was like on YouTube looking up like home birth stuff, because the pandemic was still kind of new and crazy and unknown for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, are we going to be doing this at home? And so if anyone's curious, YouTube is just a cornucopia of information on that. But yeah, he came safe and sound at the hospital. No, we didn't. But so props to everyone that does it. We're good going to the hospital. It was a great like crash course. And I was literally thinking, would we have to do this? Like, I didn't know if hospitals would start to have all these, you know, it was just totally unknown. So, but yeah, he came safe and sound, number seven. And then we all, quarantined together, and it was the weirdest paternity leave I'd ever had. And it was like 18 summers in a month, you know? So anyway, it was, yeah. And you know, you're like, am I going to hate him or love him after this? And you love him more. So it was, that's the age range. And that's kind of this last year navigating that with one additional little guy. It's made it all better and fun. But they're all spread out pretty evenly. We had a 4-year gap between 5 and 6, and then a 4-year gap between 6 and 7. But having a baby without a 2-year-old is really fun. So I highly recommend it for anyone.
We're excited to do the same. This will be our experience soon without a 2-year-old. So we have a little bit older ones. So that'll be fun. And how come number 7 was such a hell yes for you? Sometimes where you
Yeah, all of them were like, are you sure? So like number one, I was good for, you know, the first one, he was the impetus for so much in even professionally for me. But along the way, Julie was like, I'm ready to have another one. And I was just kind of like, I feel like we just finally got our head above water. Are you sure? You know, like it's finally getting maybe even slightly almost easy or at least normal. But number 7, 4 years later, it was just one of those moments where, you know, you wish you could say it was logical and rational. But at the end of the day, we discussed it. I just had this overwhelming desire to have this 7th. And so much so that I just that was it. Like, yes, we will do this no matter what. And those moments are rare where you feel this just absolute decisiveness in career changes, who you marry, whether or not you're bringing number 7 into the world. And so it was unique and special, and I'll treasure it forever.
That's so cool. And especially in a time, let's face it, I mean, that, as you know, we were just talking about what's happening right now. And I can only imagine for what you teach. It's not like through the pandemic, everyone knew what was going on health-wise, or they knew what was going on financially.
Yes.
So I imagine your demand at work was even higher, because I know that a lot of people, it was the relational side and the financial side. Those were two huge components. So I can only imagine you were pretty slammed with what you do.
Absolutely. To be totally square on the customer side, we didn't see any customers leave because they've seen what following the method does for them as far as seeking security in the financial arena. But we did see interest drop off because, as you're saying, Jim, like in that moment of almost existential wonder for people, they weren't sitting there saying, you know, honey, like looking at each other, this is all up in the air. Let's like remake how we think about money together. And it was just very much like, whoa, let's go back to the basics and start planting crops. I'm not kidding. Like people they really started to just kind of dial everything back. Like you saw kids' activities, not necessarily, I mean, they were mandated in some instances, like, hey, let's not do this or that, but everything got simpler and everything kind of was stripped away. And I maintained this list during that time of what am I learning through this really weird experiment? So we felt safe as a business. And as a business owner, I felt pretty good. We operate conservatively. I did feel tremendous concern for my team specifically. And that was hard to navigate. A team spread all over the world with all different kinds of reactions and happenings and ways governments were trying to figure this out. All humans too. Like we can't forget, you know, well, sometimes we say government as if it's like this extra thing. It's just humans trying to figure things out. And so trying to navigate all of that as a business owner that really just had one idea about how people could do their money better. And then you're navigating those dynamics. It was tremendously stressful. Brooks, our little baby, he was a break in that instance. I could come back and I could see him and I'm like, okay, this I know. Here's a constant because everything else felt very much in flux. That's
so true. Tell the gang too exactly what you do so that they understand.
Yeah.
YNAB, you know, when you speak up.
We love the story of how it was born out of your own necessity. Tell a little bit about your story, if you would, and what your service does now.
Yeah, so I'll start first with what we do now, and it's what we've always done. We haven't really changed too much, although technology continues to kind of reframe how we do what we do. But we teach people a theory, a method for thinking about their money that will enable their money to do far more than they previously thought possible. And I don't mean more in the sense that there's more money. I mean more in the sense of alignment with what you care about. So in a lot of the times, you know, they say less is more. I like to say more is not more. And what we're really going for is alignment. Your money is your, I don't want to go frou-frou on you really quick, unless you love that, then I can. But money is just a store of energy for you. You expended literal energy to earn it. And then maybe you invested it. And then that investment was an investment of energy. And it returned hopefully more energy for you. But at the end of the day, it's always energy. You can use it to buy literal energy, like you get food and it's caloric energy. You can hire someone to mow your lawn. You can hire an employee. It's all just energy. And so it pains me to the core when people expend this precious life energy. It's turned into a medium of store that is a dollar. And then they just say to me, oh, I'm just not good with money. And that is, I just can't handle it. It triggers me, as my 18-year-old almost would say, right? It's just, I can't do that. So you have to recognize that money is just your energy stored up. So let's make sure that that energy is doing what you want it to do. And it's, I will never stop preaching that. That to me is life's work. And it has not stopped being tremendously satisfying.
That's so interesting. And when you reference your son, is it your son 17, 18? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Our son is 18 as well. For some, whatever you said, it made me think that he was male. I don't know if you said it.
Yeah.
Here,
I probably said he's very male and very annoying. So yeah, it's like all the boxes are checked. Yeah.
That's funny. But it's interesting that you say he's like, it triggers him to talk about money. And it's so interesting how our parents' influence on us have such a great effect, you know, and not to overshare Jim's story, but I know it took Jim a while to get out of his family history of like his, maybe a parent that doesn't want to look at money.
Yeah,
or a parent
my dad would never look at money, never wanted to look at it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden the sand turned, you get nervous. So my mother had to take on the budgeting and the allocations, and I really didn't like it. I love both my parents, you know, and 10 minutes down the road, but it was something for Jamie and I said, I want us both to be eyes wide open. I want them to be in this together because four eyes is better than two. And also, I just think that energy is important. If one side is shut down, that energy is very warped or non-existent, which can really be draining.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're talking about energy, it helps people kind of to back off of money, talking about money and all the stories that are attached to that, and really just say, well, we're talking about how this couple should deploy their, and to say, well, one person's in charge of that. It's like, whoa, no. Now there can be minutia, like you can pay certain bills or do, I mean, all that's so boring in comparison to like, is that couple aligned? Are they clear on what they want their money to do? Like what this end result is? You end up talking about goals and aspirations and self-actualization as a couple. And that's where the fun is. So we teach all the details, but we really are, we're trying to teach four rules that I essentially stumbled upon or kind of retroactively discovered in how I had built this purely for Jesse and Julie Meekum. And then later on, as I noticed that these rules were starting to look fairly universal, they've morphed a little over the last 17 years, but not terribly. And I realized like, oh, these are like first order principles. And it's not the way people are thinking about how they should do their money. When they hear budget, they think restriction, suffocation, maybe jail. To your point, Jim, sometimes when they hear budget, they think of another spouse exerting improper and totally dysfunctional control over someone. And that's also awful. So in that sense, what we're trying to say is we're just talking about a framework for this couple to be able to say, we want this done right. And then you see stress plummet. You see marriages, and I'm not being, there's no hyperbole here. Marriage is saved.
Number one divorce reason is financial, right?
Marriage is safe. Like we can save marriages. All they have to do is say, I'm willing to give this guy who today is wearing a crazy bright orange shirt for some reason, I'm willing to give that guy a shot and let him have just, I don't know, give us 4 hours. Let's take a couple classes. Let us try and start to rewire how you're thinking about how this energy flows in and out of your life. And it works. I hate sounding like it's some, like I'm shilling something, but it's really effective. It really works.
For Jamie and I, we have our own matrix of education we teach our kids, where we say, look, other things are important, but once you pass the sixth grade, we've identified three things that we think are extremely important that you're going to use, whether you're the butcher, the candlestick maker, and it'll cross over. And that's personal development, relationship skills, and financial intelligence. And I think both of those go into the personal and the professional realm. Because you're, as we were joking before, which, you know, we want our kids to be success. So you could have a family of doctors, but if they're uncomfortable in their own skin, their relationships are in the toilet, and they're bad with money, they've never learned basic financial core intelligence like you teach, they can struggle. They can reach.
Oh, yeah. You can't out-earn a fundamental misunderstanding of how money should be managed.
Wow,
you just
that's
can't
a
out-earn.
Really good point.
That's
very
wonderful.
Good point.
So what are the four steps? Four rules. They're not
four
steps.
Rules. Prescriptions. Yeah. Hard and fast rules. Yeah. To take all fun out of your life forever. That's the, here we go, everybody.
Four of them. And I've noticed
there's only four.
Four. Yeah.
Yes, we do. I would have liked four kids. No, that's so horrible. Never, my other three later kids should never hear that joke. So I joke, my son one time, this is a total tangent. He's like, Dad, do you realize that most of the time you're lying to us? Because they'll ask me questions and I'll just lie just purely for entertainment. They're like, hey, Dad, are we going? Where are we going? I'll be like, Mexico. You know, we're driving to the grocery store. I'm like, we're going to Mexico. Did you not bring a bag? What? Anyway, I just can't help it. So they know I'm joking. But these four rules, no joke. First rule, give every single dollar a job, a purpose, a mission. Every single one. Not dollars you think you will earn. And I used to use the example of, well, maybe, you know, even if you're a government employee, and you have this really steady paycheck. And then you find out every few years, at least in the US, we just furlough people randomly and they don't get paychecks and it's all up in the air. So even my old standby example doesn't work as much anymore. No matter what, steadiest job in the world, do not look ahead and allocate that money. We're talking about you have the money, you have the energy. What should it do? You cannot have energy that hasn't yet come in. That's number one. That removes all kinds of weird games we play, like y'all, you run your own business. It's like, well, we're going to make money here. We're going to do this. This deal will close because you're both optimistic. You're both hard workers. You both have like rose colored glasses on, and those are good, mm-hmm. But not when you're deploying resources. We want resources to be scarce so that that scarcity squeezes out clarity.
Yep.
So only money you have on hand. That's rule one. Rule two, you anticipate, you look ahead. We call it embracing your true expenses. So personally, you might say, mention Mexico. Maybe you say, hey, our family wants to go to Mexico. We want to go to an all-inclusive resort and get this great vacation. Fantastic. So how much will it cost? When do you want to go? And I'm making up easy math numbers. You'd say it'll cost $6,000 and we want to go in 6 months. Okay, $1,000 a month. You now have an all-inclusive resort in Mexico bill for $1,000 this month for the next 5 months thereafter. We're saving up. We're looking ahead for larger, less frequent expenses. And then the magic happens where you're both, like the two of you are always working together on your money. But now what we've done is we've invited future Jim and Jamie to the conversation. We're like, what do you all think? And it's interesting to ask your future selves what they think. And they're like, well, we do want to go to Mexico. We're totally on board with that. Also, 4 months from now, a tire blows and we're on the side of the road and we want to be able to afford a tow truck and a new tire and not have it disrupt any other part of our lives. We want it to feel very normal. So I would say, okay, so current Jim and Jamie are like, yes, okay, we'll set aside money for that too. So you're evaluating not just your current, I want sushi tonight because I have a craving moments, which are also fine, but you're also evaluating like, I don't want to be stuck on the side of the road. I want to have a great Christmas for the kids or holidays. I want to go to Mexico. And also, yes, we do have to pay the property taxes. So it all comes together where you're allocating that money in this way that's letting that scarcity still clarify your priorities, but you're not forgetting the two people at the table that, at least in America, are so much forgotten, which the future version of you two, where you're like, when we're 80, I don't know if we want to be grinding 60 hours a week. I think we might be cool with like a nice steady 15 easy consulting gig to keep us sharp. And so you'd want to be thinking like, well, what money are we putting ahead for those two? So that's rule two. That's a long way of saying, look ahead, anticipate larger, less frequent expenses. The third rule is, it's like the most important rule and it shouldn't be one. But when you two have set out your plan, you should be able to change it an hour later. So, you know, your boy, probably a fantastic driver, not the normal teenage driver, but an hour later, he gets he's totally safe, nothing bad happened, but he bangs up the car. Okay, well, was your plan good an hour ago? Yes. Does budgeting no longer work? Is this a fruitless exercise? Absolutely not. New information, new plan, all the time. When you're heading down to Mexico and you're like, we want to go to the beach, and you're telling all the kids how great the beach is going to be, bring your sunscreen, bring this, bring this, bring this. And then you wake up and for some reason, like storm clouds rolled in. Are you all just like, oh my gosh, vacations are the worst idea. Look what's just, it's like, no, you change the plan. So that's a weird rule. But it's like, hey, you made this plan. 5 minutes later, you're allowed to change it. A day later. And it's not that you failed in your plan. It's that you are planning.
Yeah.
You are doing. And our fourth rule, is we call it aging your money. And it's the idea that you need to let money sit. So a money that you two earn today, maybe you do some big launch and it's like a big pile of money. The idea is that the money today that you earn or tomorrow that you earn, we want it to sit for a while. So debt is the opposite of this. Debt is spending money that hasn't yet come into your system. We just want the money to sit. Someone that earns money Friday and it's gone on Monday, their age of money is 2 days old, roughly. We want to get people to where it's more like 45, 60 days old. If they follow the first three rules, they get there. So it's not something you actively do. Just follow those first three rules and money will start to sit in your system longer. You'll start to sleep better, literally. You'll sleep better. Arguments with your spouse become discussions in this weird way. Like it's less loaded because you're just not right on the edge. It's like if I'm chatting with one of my kids and we're on a hike through a nature trail and the nearest cliff is 4 miles away, we're chatting. If I'm walking with my cute little four-year-old and we're right on the edge of a cliff because it's a fantastic views and it's worth going, but she makes a move suddenly that's scary, I won't be like, hey, Faye, do you want to maybe just... No. Emotion, intensity in the moment. That emotion is well-placed. And sometimes emotion in relationships, totally well-placed. But sometimes the emotion is misguided. And that would be where I'm back and Faye steps off of a well-manicured trail into some soft ferns. And I'm like, whoa, Faye, no, totally misguided. So the idea that emotion needs to match the situation, and we are continually, habitually, chronically operating in an environment where the emotions are always high stakes. So we can't ever have a low stakes, chill, little bit of wine. I'm not a drinker, but I can imagine it. A little bit of wine that then has people discussing money, not looking at this chasm. And so rule four is sometimes you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. It's like, no. This is critical to like this lubricant for the rest of the rules, because the emotions then can then match the dynamic. So that's my monologue. And now you all can just like, you can fire questions at me, but those are those four rules.
And now how do you, going back to this older teens that we have, and can you play out for us, how do you get buy-in on your rules? And do you change the way you communicate them when you're communicating them to your children? How do you create this buy-in culture with your rules?
Yeah, so I don't change the rules at all. Actually, we as parents, adults, we become bad with money over time. Kids are really good at understanding how it works. They just learn these horrible things. So you could test it. At 8 years old is when I actually set up my kids with the software. So the software is, and I'll mention software right here, totally second fiddle to the thinking. So you don't have to go off and be like, I want to check out Jesse's software. Cool. Yeah, that's great. But the thinking is the key. And then you could do it on a piece of paper. You could build your own spreadsheet, whatever. So that's the last time I want to mention the software. It's about the thinking. We set them up on there. And I remember about 3 years ago, I'm setting up Max, right? He's now 11 or something, but I shouldn't say or something. I know his age. He's 11. He's almost 12. I even know his birthday. It's in December okay sometime. I hate when I do that. People are like, God, that guy, does he even know how many kids? I'm like, one, two. I know I have him.
We're like, nah, 11.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, it was close.
11 something is an age.
So like, you're like, he's an accountant and he said 11 or something. You're like, yeah, that's my accountant. It comes out. So 3 years ago, I'm introducing Max to the software specifically. He's watched Julie and I use words like budget. Oh, it's so scary. It was like, oh, that's not in the budget. That's not in the plan. We can't buy that right now or whatever, because we're saving up for something else. So they start to learn trade-offs in like the lightest of senses of the word. But when they're eight, they start to work for me. They clean this office that's barely used and they wonder why they clean it. It's just so they have to clean it. And they're like, Dad, it's not even dirty. It's like, that's not the point. Go make it just as clean as it is right now. So they go and they work for me and they start earning some money. And the thing that you do with the kids, when you're teaching them this idea of giving every dollar a job and scarcity, you don't even have to teach them. You just have to make sure they recognize it. And what you'll do is you'll say, hey, Max, okay, you have $100 that you've earned or whatever. What do you want to do with that money? And he'll say something like, Legos. You're like, oh, cool. Yeah, Legos. Great, great, great. Which ones? Ones, plural. Make him think of a lot of things. Harry Potter. Yes. Star Wars. Yes. Just keep going. What about this Lego? What about that Lego? And then like, hey, what about, aren't you getting into golf? What about a brand new wedge? Yeah. What about a putter? Think how many more putts you could sink if you had a new putter. Oh yeah, I want that. You just feed the machine. You make him think of every single thing he may ever want. And then you bring him back to, okay, we have $100. What do you want to do? I promise you, if this has happened with every one of my kids, they immediately grab, if the ticket or the item is a little expensive, they immediately grab all of the money and focus it completely on the top thing. The word priority used to not have a plural. It came about later, but it used to literally mean one. So we now are like, hey, what are your top 50 priority? You know, you all know that works because you run a business. So it's like, oh yeah, I know that game. So priority. And they're very good at recognizing, oh, I only have 100. What do I want the most? Adults, they're like, I only have 100. Okay, I'll just swipe a card. I'll just borrow. Adults are so used to walking past, running out, and just starting to spend whatever. So you just have the kids. You don't really have to, I don't want to say dumb it down. You don't have to tailor it for the kids. You just have to have them recognize, I have finite resources and lots of wants. Which one is most important? And then you start to have them recognize they can't get the thing they really want. But what if we did this next month, Max, when you've earned $100, could you get it then? He's like, oh, I could. And if I did, I'd have $20 still left over. Then I could start knocking off number two. they get it so, so well.
Yeah. I love that.
That's so interesting. Now, you also reference that there's joy in budgeting, that, you know, a moment ago you were like, yes, oh, it's not scary or painful, or, you know, there's joy.
The opposite of pain is joy, I'd say. Right?
Yes.
And so, yeah, for your children who already get it, no big deal, because they don't realize that they already find it a joy. They're learning, they're growing. But what about a spouse? You and Julie came into this together.
Yes.
But what about our listeners that their spouse is not on the same page?
Yeah. In our product teams, where we're doing research and interviewing couples like yourselves and trying to figure out, okay, how do the shields do this? Like, what's their way of doing? We found out that couples functioning, high functioning financially, high functioning couples, it amazes us how many different ways you can work it in, like how many different ways it can be excellent. So there are some common threads, but we have a name for the spouse that is reluctant, and it is the reluctant spouse. We just call them that all the time. What about the reluctant spouse? How do we, and it's not a him or her thing at all. It totally switches, totally switches. So it's not the division of responsibilities we talked about a little bit, where it's like, oh, well, I'll enter transactions into the app and I'll do this. Like, I reconcile our budget. I'm a recovering accountant. I like to make sure that things are tidy. Julie just wants to kind of come in high level and make sure that the energy, the money, is going to go where we want it. So for her, travel is a big deal. We want the kids to have the right amount of activities. So she actually pushes that down. She kind of tries to temper us on, like, oh, we could have them do this and this, and really recognize, like, more is less in that way. So she cares about that, and she's a fantastic cook. So she cares about the ingredients that she cooks with. And literally beyond that, she's just kind of like, are we checking the other goals? Like, and I'm obviously showing her the business financials every month. Like, hey, this is a big deal. I'm in the nitty gritty of it, but she's my advisor. And I shouldn't even say advisor, like, we're this. So she doesn't jump on podcasts. She'd be mortified, but she'd kill it, but she'd be mortified. But when I come to her with stuff, I'm amazed how often, as a partner in the business, that she's just so prescient on things and can get to the heart of an issue. I think she needs all this context, and it's like, no, she's already there. So in that way, highest level, she's right there. So back to your reluctant spouse thing. We're talking about low functioning situation. I'll give you one tactic that I've found has worked for a long time with couples. And it is that you keep a secret just for a little while. And it's the best kind of secret. So bear with me. Where normally I don't think you keep any secrets at all, except what you're going to give them for the holidays or something. In this instance, because the person is reluctant to look at money and they don't really care, you'll find this is pretty easy to do. You just start to kind of launder money out of your system into something that they won't see. There was a woman that I chatted with a long time ago. She had a basil jar it formerly had basil, the herb, in it. And she would get refunds for random things, and she would ask for the cash back for the refund and stick the refund in this basil jar. They wanted to get out of debt. The husband was totally for that idea, but just really kind of meh on, like, energy level around it. It was all her. She wanted it so bad. And he was like, I support you, but kind of in, like, not least helpful, in the most mediocre way. Just kind of like, yeah, I'm there. I'm not dead weight, but I'm certainly not, like, pushing this with you. So she does this refund thing where she's laundering money out of the family finances, getting refunds he never knows about. She's sticking it in this basil jar. For Christmas, she has him open the jar, like, unwrap it, and he opens it. It's full of money. I can't even remember how it was over $1,000. So it was a substantial amount of money that she'd worked on, I think, for over a year. And it was the amount that got them the rest of the way out of debt. They were there, but it was kind of slow for them, and they were grinding and grinding. And she was able to say, this is the rest of it. And there were a couple of things that it did. One, it showed him that she was budgeting. And budgeting is just a horrible word to say, allocating resources so we achieve our most desired outcomes. So that's what she was doing. He wasn't on board, really. He was just kind of dead weight, like I mentioned. He was emotionally moved by what she had done, like, moved. She mentioned how the dollars smelled like basil, which I thought was funny, but they noticed the smell. And he cried when he opened it. And it was suddenly like he realized this thing that she had wanted so badly. And you can tie this to more than just money. So learn the principle here, all of your listeners. But he saw in that moment, she had sacrificed tremendously for this. She had worked so hard for it. And he saw the fruits of well-placed effort. And from that point forward, he was like, yes, this is it. This is how we achieve what we want. So sometimes you can do things like set aside money for a thing that your spouse thinks you would say no to. Set aside money for a nice watch, a nice vacation, whatever, where they're like, they wouldn't even ask, could we buy this? Because it was obvious, like, well, no, we can't afford that. It's out of our reach. We're living, it's tight. Set aside money for that secretly. And then when you present it to them, tell them 50,000 ways the budget did this for us. Our planning did this for us. Yeah, for sure. We asked ourselves, what should this money do? And we decided some of it should buy that superfluous watch that you never thought you could get. And I don't mean to, I hate giving examples because then people are like, oh, Jesse doesn't really think we should use money for watches. I don't think anything. Yeah. I don't think anything. You do it for whatever you want. As long as you have clarity, we are good. So that the reluctant spouse many times can be persuaded by experiencing the effects of energy allocated appropriately, achieving that desired outcome. So
powerful. I mean, this is looking, this is such a big term approach. I mean, which can definitely have positive consequences that continue to build.
Yes. It's a, there's that old movie, like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, right? Like an old movie. But it's what they call a long con, right?
Yeah, right.
It's a long con. Long con. Yes, exactly.
Well, speaking of positive long cons, and I'm sure you've seen that before, kind of our finale question for all of our guests is something we developed a while ago called the 75-year-old self. You know, everyone says, Jesse, what would you tell 21-year-old Jesse? And that's great. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, 2 years ago when we really took big turns for the better, I had started to do something instead of going that way, I'd say, what would my 75-year-old self be telling me right now? What
Love
advice
it.
Would he give to me and to my family? Because it brings us to a bigger, wiser self. So what do you think the 75-year-old Jesse, so we're going years down the road, but what advice do you think he'd give to you, to your family, to your clients? What advice would the 75-year-old self give?
I love that framing. Love it. Hopefully he says, thanks for the money.
Yeah, you know, I love that.
Thanks for the money. Thanks for the energy. You know, thanks for pouring your soul into this thing. And then I think if he noticed, I think if he was chatting with me, like current me right now, he would say, make sure your pace is appropriate.
That's really good.
I like the idea of, we call it a measured pace. And we also like the phrase that we use sometimes in software development, you'll use this, where we say, make haste slowly. So you get to have haste in there, but there's a check. I think he would say, watch your pace. Because that can, when you're moving too fast and when you're inputs, outputs all the time, I think you can lose sight of what the 75-year-old Jesse realized it was all about along the way.
Beautifully said.
That is a great perspective. Thanks for being here, Jesse. Where can our listeners learn more about you?
Well, hopefully they're not afraid to type the word budget into their computer, but youneedabudget.com is where you can get all of our help. I'm not really on the social stuff. Talk about pace, you know, I'm not really there, but we do have a lively social presence from people that just love it. So
it's fun to look at the images, like the cartoon type images.
It's
fun to look at. You've definitely found a way to help your audience split such information.
Yeah. I mean, it is money. So it's kind of serious, like curmudgeonly serious. Like, let's bring a little levity into this. After all of my preaching, I'll end with, it is just money, people. Yeah. So like all of that aside, like, let's make sure that we keep it all well in hand. But youneedabudget.com. If you're a reader, there's a book called You Need a Budget that's available at your library, most likely, and you can check it out there and on Amazon or wherever you can grab a book. And then if you just really want to hear more of this voice, then they could jump over to the You Need a Budget podcast. So, yeah.
That's fun. Well, thank you so much for all that you've taught our listeners today. It's been great having you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.